Parashat Vayechi. Let's begin a few psukim into the Sedra. We will read, and then we're going to discuss. The beginning of the Sedra is Yaakov Avinu asking Yosef that after he dies, he should take him for burial to Eretz Canaan. Al no tikbereini b'mitzchayim. Don't bury me in Egypt. Perek Memchet. Vayhi achar advarim ha'el, and it came to pass after these things, vayomer le'Yosef, and it was told to Yosef, hinei avicha choleh, behold, your father is sick. Vayikach et shnei banav imo, he took his two sons with him, et Menashe ve'et Ephraim. He took his two sons, Menashe and Ephraim. Vayageid li'Yakov, and now it was told to Yaakov that Yosef is on his way to see him. Vayomer, hinei bincha Yosef boi lecho, your son Yosef is coming unto you. Vayitchazek Yisrael vayeshev al amitah. Yisrael gathered his strength, and as Rashi points out, because of kvod malchus, the honor and the dignity, the majesty of malchus, of royalty, Yosef is the Moshel b'chol Eretz Mitzchayim. He's the ruler of all of Egypt, and therefore, if he can sit up, so he's going to sit up for it. Vayeshev al amitah, he sat on the bed. Vayome Yaakov and Yosef. Yaakov said to Yosef, El Shaddai Niro Eli Peluz Be'eretz Canaan. Vayevarech oti. HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to me in Luz in the land of Canaan, and he blessed me. What did he say to me? Vayome Eli, he said to me, Hinini ma'pircha v'hiviticha, I'm going to cause you to be fruitful and multiply. I'm going to make you a community of nations. Now this is when Yaakov has returned after 20 years in the house of Lavan, and the only one left to be born really is only Binyamin. So who is this Kahal Amim that is going to come from him? Who is this community of nations? That's what Yaakov is going to explain in a moment. So what did Hashem say to him? I'm going to make you a community of nations, and I will give this land to your children after you as an inheritance forever. And now, therefore, where is this community of nations coming from? Your two sons who were born to you in the land of Egypt, before I came to you to Egypt, Lihem, they are mine. Ephraim and Menashe, Keruvain and Shimon, Yehiyu li. Ephraim and Menashe are like my own children. Keruvain and Shimon, Yehiyu li. They shall be unto me. Which means that Yosef now is being given a double portion in the land. And in a sense, what's happening is that the Bechorah, the birthright, is being taken from Reuven and now transferred to Yosef. Yosef will henceforth be two tribes, Ephraim and Menashe. Umo laretcha asher holadeta achrem, those who will be born unto you afterwards, lechoyiyu, they shall be yours. Meaning that they are not going to achieve the status of a tribe. Al shem acheyem yikaru benachalatam, they shall be called on the name of their brothers. Whoever will be born afterwards to Yosef will either be subsumed under the heading of Ephraim, the tribe of Ephraim, or Menashe. Here is the famous pasuk that we mentioned a few weeks ago in the question and answer period after Ashir. Vani bevoi mipadon, Yaakov says to Yosef, I, when I came from Padan Aram, Meita alai Rachel be'eretz Canaan baderech. Rachel died in the land of Canaan on the road, ba'od kivrat eretz lavav rata, when there was still a little bit, a piece of road to arrive in Ephrat. Ve'ekbereha sham bederech Ephrat, hi beit lechem, and I buried her there on the way to Ephrat, which is beit lechem. In a moment we're going to go over that famous Rashi again. So here basically what Yaakov is telling Yosef, I am troubling you to take me all the way from Egypt and bury me in the land of Canaan in the Maarat HaMachpelah. Your mother died on the road, and I buried her there. I didn't even bring her into the city of Bethlehem, let alone I didn't bring her to the Maarat HaMachpelah. We're going to learn that, Rashi, in a few months. But first I want you to get the picture of the parsha. Vayar Yisrael b'nei Yosef Yisrael saw the sons of Yosef. Vayomen, he said, who are these? Mi'ele? Vayomen Yosef Elovim. Yosef said to his father, Vonai hem, they are my children, asher notan li elukim vazeh, that God gave to me. Vayomen, so he said, kochen noilai, bring them unto me, vavorchem, and I will bless them. Vayne Yisrael kovtu mizoken, Yisrael's eyes had become heavy from age. Lo yuchal lirot, he couldn't see well. Vayagesho tamilav, Yosef brought the two children over to him, and he kissed them, and he hugged them. Yom Yisrael, Yosef Yisrael said to Yosef, it never occurred to me, I didn't think that I would ever again see your face. And behold, not only have I seen you, Elohim has shown me also your children. Yosef took the two children out from Yaakov, and he bowed down to him to the ground. Yosef takes the two children, et Ephraim, b'yemino Ephraim, he holds on his right hand side, v'et Menashe b'smolo, and Menashe is to the left, b'yemin Yisrael, to the right of Yaakov Avinu. And he brought them over to him. That means like this. As I face you, my right corresponds to your left, and my left hand corresponds to your right hand. So he takes his two children, and he has Ephraim on his right hand side, and Menashe on the left, so that when they will be standing in the presence of Yaakov, it will be Menashe on the right and Ephraim on the left. Menashe is the firstborn. He should be on the right hand side. The right seems to be more important. So what did Yaakov do? He stretched out his right hand by Yoshet al Rosh Ephraim, and he placed it on the head of Ephraim. He crossed his hands. Here his right hand goes on to the head of Ephraim, who was standing on his left. And the pasuk points out he is the younger one. That's Smola, Rosh Menashe. And then he put his left hand onto the head of Menashe. Sikel et yadav. He moved his hands with intelligence. There was clear, there was intent. There was intent here. He had something in mind. Ki Menashe habichor, because Menashe is the firstborn. Incidentally, this is going to be a bit problematic. Ki Menashe HaBechor seems to be, he is putting his left hand on the head of Ephraim because Menashe is the firstborn, or despite the fact that Menashe is the firstborn. What it would seem the pasuk should have said is that he places his left hand on the head of Ephraim, even though, despite the fact, lamrot, that Menashe is the Bechor. We'll see. Vayivarech et Yosef, and he blessed Yosef, and he said, Olekim asher talchu avotai lefanav, the God whom my fathers went before him, Avram the Yitzchak, Olekim aroei oti, God who took care of me, may odi ad hayom hazeh, from when I was until today, Malach HaGoel Otimi Kodo, the angel who redeemed me from all evil, Yivarecha Tana'orim, should bless the children, Yikarevahem Shmi B'Shem Avotai, my name and the name of my fathers, Avram Yitzchok, shall be called upon them, V'Yidgularo, V'Kerev Haaretz, and they should spread out in the midst of the land. Just another few psukim. Vayar Yosef, Yosef saw Ki Yoshit Aviv Yad Yimino Adosh Ephraim, Vayera Be'inah, Yosef saw that Yaakov, his father, had placed his right hand on the head of Ephraim, and he felt bad about it. Vayitmoch yad aviv, that means he lifted his father's hand and held it with the intent now of moving his right hand to the head of Menashe and his left hand to the head of Ephraim. He wants to move his father's hands. The Hasirotar, to remove it, may Al Rosh Ephraim. He wants to remove the right hand from the head of Ephraim, Al Rosh Menashe, onto the head of Menashe. Vayomer Yosef Aloviv. Yosef said to his father, Lo Chein Avi. Father, that's not right. That's not the way it should be. Ki Zeh HaBechor. Menashe is the firstborn. Sinyi Mincha Al Rosho. Place your right hand on his head. Vayomer Aviv. His father refused. Vayomer, and he said, Yadati bini, yadati, I know, my son, I know. Gam hu yiyelam. The Bechor, Menashe, he will also be a great people. The Gam hu yigdal, he will be great. Ulam, however, achiv hakaton, yigdal mimenu. His younger brother is going to be even greater than him. The Zaro yihye, melo hagoyim. And his children will fill the nations. I know that Menashe is the Bechor. I know that Ephraim is the younger one. I moved my hands with intent. Yes, Ephraim is going to be greater than Menashe. Okay. Let's go back to that pasuk, Vani Bevoi Mipadan. And we're going to read the Rashi. The Rashi that I told you, there was a Rebbe Amalamed would learn this Rashi with children. There was a special mournful niggin with which it was sung, and I don't even remember myself anymore. Take a look at the generations, the Yechida generations. I'm going to read the Rashi. Vani bevoi mi padam, Pasuk Zayin. Vani bevoi mi padam. Yaakov says to Yosef, when I came from Padan Aram, va'af al pi shani matriach olecha. Even though I am troubling you to take me and bury me in the land of Canaan, I didn't do that for your mother. She died near Beit Lechem. And there was only Kivrat Eretz, Midat Eretz, Alpayim Ama, just a small distance down the road to get into Beit Lechem, and I didn't move her from the spot. No, I have no excuse that it was terrible rain. It was pouring. I just couldn't take her into Beit Lechem. Certainly I couldn't take her to the Maarat HaMachpelah in Hebron. So Altoma, don't say she'ikvu alai gishamim. The rain stopped me milaholicha ulekovra of the Chevron from taking her and burying her in Chevron. Eit hagarid haya. It was a time when the land is dry, the very end of the dry season. Shehaoretz chalula uminukevet kikivara. Rashi is learning kivrat eretz. Two meanings. Kivrat eretz can be a distance of land. Kivrat eretz, when the earth has holes in it like a sieve, when the land is very dry, it looks as though it's cracking. There are holes. It was dry. We know that. In fact, the Seder Olam says that Binyamin was born on Yud Aleph Cheshvan. Binyamin was born on Yud Aleph Cheshvan. Of course, the birth of Binyamin is the day on which Rachel dies. She dies in childbirth. You can't find usually a time at which Eretz Yisrael is drier than that, because a week after that, later that week, on Yud Zayin Cheshvan is when the first rains begin. It hasn't rained for 6-7 months. So Yaakov says, there was no excuse of rain. Ve'egbereh Hosham, Rashi says, and I buried her there below holachtiha afilu lebeit lechem lachnis alaretz. I didn't even take her into Beit Lechem. I buried her on the road. And here comes, of course, the most painful and the most poignant and the most moving part of the Rashi. V'yodati sheyesh b'libcha alai, and I know that in your heart you hold it against me. In your heart you've held it against me, I don't know how many years it is, 50, 60, 70 years, I don't know how long. You've always held it against me that I didn't bury your mother in the Marat HaMachpelah. I didn't even bother to take her into the city of Bethlehem. On the road, Baderech, that's where I buried her. Now I'm going to tell you, my son, Aval Dalech, or you should know, Shal Pi Habdibur Kivarti Hasham, I buried her there by the express command of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was Dibur Hashem. He wanted me to bury her there. Shetahela Ezra Labanel, so that she should be the one who's going to come to the aid and the assistance of her children. Kishiaglo Tam Nebuzaradin, when Nebuzaradin is going, the commander in chief of the forces of Nebuchadnezzar, who's going to take Jews in chains off into exile. Vahayu Ovrim Derech Sham, they're going to pass Kever Rachel. Yotzos Rachel al Kivra, Rachel comes out over her grave, Uboha, and cries, Umevakeshet Aleihem Rachamim, and she asks for mercy. Shenema, the famous Pesukim in Yirmiyahu, Kol V'Rama Nishma, the voice is heard on high, Nihi B'chi Tamrudim, bitter crying, Rachel Mevako al Boneo, Rachel crying for her children. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Meshiva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers her, and he tells her, yes, Zachol Lefulateich, there is reward for what you've done, Yishavu Vanim Ligvulam, the children will return to their home, back to Eretz Yisrael, Yishavu Me'eretz Oyev. One question that we just discussed after class as well, Why indeed didn't Yaakov tell Yosef all these years? Why didn't he tell him? Yadati, I know that you hold it against me. Do you understand? We're talking about a father whose most special relationship is with his son Yosef, but there's a cloud over the relationship. No one talks about it. Yosef doesn't say a word. Yaakov never says anything on that until now, till the end of his life, but a whole lifetime. Here is a relationship that something is wrong with it. Why didn't Yaakov correct it? Why didn't he tell him, Yosef, don't hold it against me that I buried your mother here on the road? You should know, an express mitzvah. The Rebbe Shem wants me, and for good reason. She is going to be the one who's going to come to the aid and the assistance of Klal Yisrael when they go off into exile. So the point that I made, I believe, is that this is the great news that Yaakov has to tell Yosef. And this is going to make him happy. You know, you should know there's going to be a churban. There's going to be death, destruction, desolation, famine, hunger, dying by the sword. Your children are going to be taken in chains into exile. In other words, Yaakov should tell him this news, so now everything will be much better, you understand. So the relationship between Yaakov and Yosef, now I feel great. Terrific, nothing to worry about. There will no longer be a cloud over our relationship. Gewaldig! No. Yaakov is ready a whole lifetime to risk this weak link in the relationship. But he doesn't feel that he has the right or should or even doesn't want to utter this terrible besorah out of his mouth. At the last moment when it is necessary, then he'll say it. Before that, he's not going to say it. Why didn't Yosef ask his father? Tata, this is where you're going to bury Mama. What are you doing? I don't know. I just assume that from Rambam's and Rashi's that we learned in the last number of weeks, there was a tremendous amount of derech eretz. Derech eretz for Yaakov, they were afraid. In a sense, it would seem he's calling into question what his father Yaakov had done. Maybe more than that. Maybe he was afraid of what the answer might be. Didn't want to risk that. He didn't want to risk that. Yes? Rachel cries for all of her children, and if you take a look at the mountain there, God gives two promises, makes two guarantees he gives Rachel. One is v'shavu me'eretz oyev, they will return from the land of the enemy, and the other is v'shavu vanim l'gvulam, the sons will return to their boundary. The Malbim says v'shavu me'eretz oyev, that refers to Yehuda and Binyamin who were taken off in chains to Babel, the ones who suffered throughout history. V'shavu vanim l'gvulam, they will return to their boundary. Those are the 10 tribes who really were not, didn't suffer, they weren't taken off in chains, there was a transfer of populations, because this is what Sancheret Melech Ashur did with the populations of the countries that he conquered. So the Malbim says V'shavu vanim l'gvulam is referring to the 10 tribes. They will return from wherever they may be out there to their boundary. V'shavu me'eretz oyev is referring to Yehuda and Binyamin. So it's clear that she's praying for all of them. All right. The point is, so we explained why Yosef doesn't ask. But there's something here which is an extension of something I said earlier this week that's very fascinating. We had asked in the parasha, in Parsha Vayigash, last week, Sedra, it says that when the brothers came back from the land of Egypt after their second journey there, Yosef had already revealed himself to the brothers. They come back home, and they tell their father everything that Yosef said. Oh, Yosef Chai, Yosef is still alive. Vayakidu. They told him all of the words of Vayakidu lo lemar. They told him, oh, Yosef Chai, Yosef is still alive. V'chihu moshel v'chol eretz Mitzrayim. He's ruling in all of the land of Egypt. Vayofeg libo. His heart was faint. Ki lo ha'emin lahem. He did not believe them. What do you mean he didn't believe them? This is the question that we ask. What do you mean he didn't believe them? Are his children fooling him? Is some terrible mistake happening? What does he expect, that they're going to tell him right away, no, Yosef isn't really alive? I mean, the brothers, the sons, his 10, 11 sons are telling him, Yosef is alive and he's the ruler of all of Egypt. Vayofeg libo, his heart is faint. Kilo hem and lehem, didn't believe them. Vayedabru elav et kol divrei Yosef, they spoke to him all of the words of Yosef that Yosef had said to them. Vayaret ha'akalot, and he saw the wagons that Yosef had sent to carry him. Vatechi ruach Yaakov, Avim Yaakov comes to life, and he says, Rav, O Yosef ben Ichai, my son Yosef is alive. Why doesn't he believe them? So I'm just going to repeat part of a magnificent Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvot, and on that basis we're going to see that a number of things in our Sedra right here are going to be a great deal better understood. This was the kernel of the drasha this past Shabbos, and we gave a kernel, Shabbat kernel, in Ramot Motzei Shabbos, the askora for Noah. Mitzvah Reish Tzadik. The Rambam says the following. Rambam says that a judge, the halacha is that a judge is not permitted to pass judgment on anything. A Sanhedrin cannot judge on the basis of circumstantial evidence. can't make a decision on the basis of probability. It seems so clear that this is what happened. And the Rambam brings the classic example. Reuven is pursuing Shimon. Reuven wants to kill Shimon. Reuven has a knife in his hand. Reuven pursues Shimon into a house. We come into the house a moment later. There is Shimon with stab wounds, dying in a pool of his blood. Reuven is standing there with a bloody knife in his hand. Beis Din cannot punish Reuven. Circumstantial evidence. We are making an assumption. It looks so clear that Reuven is the murderer. Not good enough. Not good enough. As far as Beis Din is concerned, regardless of how close the probability is that this is the truth, that Reuven indeed killed Shimon, no good. We need witnesses. We need witnesses. Then the Rambam goes on to explain the lo tarchikse. Don't think that this is far out. V'titole mizeh ha-din, and you may wonder about this din. Something wrong with it. Why not? Why shouldn't we be able to say it's clear Reuven is the one who killed Shimon? There's nobody else in the building. He's holding the knife. It's bloody. It's dying. Stab wounds. So the Rambam says, ki hadvarim ha'efsharim mehem krovei ha'efsharut u'mehem rechokei ha'efsharut. Whenever you're talking about things that are possible or probable, there are things that probability is high, and then there are things that the probability is not that high. You know, and the beautiful term that he uses is u'mehem emtsoyim. Then there are things that are someplace in the middle. There are events that are highly probable. There are those that are highly improbable. And in the middle someplace, as he says, ula efshar, possibility or probability, rochav gadol, there is a great area out there. And there's a whole spectrum. And there's someplace in the middle, sort of, you know, pretty probable, quite possible. Says the Rambam that if Torah would have permitted Sanhedrin to pass judgment on the basis of high probability, do you know what the probability is? There would be an erosion in all of justice. Because one Beis Din, that depends on one's point of view. This seems highly probable. He is the one who committed the crime. Another Beis Din may see something that, well, the probability is not 90%, but the probability is 85% that Reuven is the criminal. 85% is a high probability. A next Beis Din may see something that where the probability is maybe 70%. I mean, that is high probability. That's more than 50% probability. Chances are clear, clear as day. The chances are, statistically speaking, that Reuven is the criminal. And the Rambam says this erosion would continue to the point where innocent people would be put to death. Therefore, the Torah locked shut the halacha and said you cannot make any decision on the basis of probability. Even if the probability is as high as Reuven standing over a dead Shimon with a bloody knife in his hand. No good. Cannot paskin on the basis of probability. Because in all probability, the erosion of all of this probability is so possible that innocent people, probably and possibly, will be put to death. You got the point. Yaakov stands before his sons who now tell him that Yosef is still alive. You know what he says? I don't believe you. I want proof positive. Do you know why he doesn't believe them? Because when I think of the scene is so similar to what the Rambam is describing. 22 years old earlier, his children bring in a bloody cup.
coat, a ktonet pasim, and they tell him, Hakerna, please recognize, Haktonet Bincha, is this your son's coat or not? And he says, yes. Never. Chayaro achalatu torov toraf Yosef. Yosef been torn apart. A wild animal ate him. What did he do? He made a decision on the basis of probability. And what happens if he would not have accepted that as evidence?
And the fact is, I talked to one of the lawyers in shul in the morning, right before the drasha, as this occurred to me, and I asked him, how do you say habeas corpus in Hebrew? Habeas corpus means you cannot judge anybody unless we have the corpse. Bring the corpse. So it's interesting, in Hebrew it's habeas corpus. Habeas corpus. So what's good about it is lahavi in Hebrew would also mean to bring. And I wasn't just making fun of these Israelis that use all sorts of Latin terminology that we wouldn't have used, but habeas, bring unto us the corpus. What happens, I begin to imagine to myself, if Yaakov would have said, yes, I see Yosef's coat, it's all bloody, but there's no body here. How do I know what happened? Maybe if he would not have jumped to a conclusion and made that assumption, you know what he would have done? He would have done, what does Tzal do, Nevuch, if somebody is missing? Osin Srikot. He would have taken his family and gone through the whole area of Shechem, and he would have gone through Dotan, and they would have started asking questions. Did you see a boy who answers to this description here in the area? And you know what he would have found out? I suspect that he would have found out that this area is the main route for all sorts of shayarot convoys that are moving from Mesopotamia down to Mitzrayim. There were Midyanim here and Yishmaelim here. All sorts of groups pass through. He would have sent his boys to Mitzrayim, and they would have ultimately found him. But he didn't. He didn't do that. He jumped to a conclusion. He sees the bloody coat and he says, Tarof Torah Yosef. Not good enough. 22 years later, Yaakov is not going to make the same mistake. They tell him Yosef is still alive. Vayafek Libo, Lo Hamilan. He doesn't believe them. Maybe it's somebody who looks like Yosef. And you know what occurs to me now? Wait a minute. You fellas, you are up. This was the second time you went down to Egypt. This was the person who the last time, a year ago, he was the one who accused you of being spies. You were in his presence for so long. You didn't recognize that it's Yosef. Now you come down to me for the second time. You come up to the Canaan for the second time. Now you tell me, oh, Yosef Chai, and he's the Moshe of the Kol Eretz Mitzrayim, the fellow you were telling me about the last time around. You didn't recognize him. I want proof. I'm not going to jump to conclusions ever again. I want proof. I want to know the truth. Ah, when they show him the Agolot, as Rashi points out, that Yosef was sending a message, the last thing I learned with you was the Parsha of Eglah Rufa. He knew that there's only one person in the world who could possibly have known that, and that's Yosef. Yaakov is not going to make the mistake of jumping to conclusions, assuming all sorts of things. Huh? But Rashi clearly says that, that's the Medrash, and Rashi says there's never any such thing as one shot in a pasuk. But for the present, I'm assuming I take the Rashi, which is Chazal, Vayarba Adgolot, he saw the Adgolot, Batechi, Ruach Yaakov, Avien, and he comes to life. So there was obviously a connection between the Adgolot and the fact that he now believes that it's Yosef.
That's
yes.
Precisely Rashi's reason for saying the Russia. The fact that it wasn't Yosef was not Adgolot. That's why Rashi makes the Russia.
No, the Pasuk says, Asher Sholach Yosef lo Seidoto. He saw the Akalot that Yosef had sent.
But it's Pharaoh sent the Akalot.
Yeah, but it doesn't say that here.
In the other...
Yes, in another place it does, but here...
No, that's exactly the reason Rashi makes the drasha. Because it wasn't Yosef who sent the Akalot.
But that's not what it says in this pasuk. Whatever it is. Whatever it is. That's not the point. The point is that Rashi says that there was a message that was being sent. The real point is, it's quite clear that Yaakov does not simply take his children's word for it that this is Yosef. He wants some kind of proof. In our Sefer, in Parsha Vayechi, do we have any idea what it was that for a lifetime Yosef thought, why did my father bury my mother on the road? What does Yaakov tell him? Yadati, I knew she is the Libchalai. I know that in your heart you've held it against me a lifetime. Whatever it was that Yosef assumed, in one single instant of time, do you know what Yosef finds out? It was all wrong. In one moment of time, Yosef finds out that everything that he may have thought about his father for a whole lifetime, why father didn't bury my mother in Bethlehem or in Hebron? It's all wiped out in a single instant. One word, al pi ha-dibur. I did it because it was Mitzvah Hashem. I don't know what Yosef may have assumed. At the very worst, Yosef may have assumed that, you know, father didn't love my mother that much. He didn't treat her properly. Didn't give her the covet that she deserved. It means that it's very, very possible. It's very, very possible for us to live with all sorts of incorrect ideas in our minds.
You know what? We may very well live a lifetime like that with nobody to set us straight. Here at least Yaakov turns to Yosef and he says, you should know, Al-Fi Ha-Dibur, I did it because God told me to do so.
In this same parasha, Yosef takes a look how Yaakov is placing his hands, crossing his hands over the heads of Ephraim and Manasseh. What has he assumed? He says it clearly. Lo kein avi. No, father, that's not right. This one is the Bechor, and this one is the younger one. He's made an assumption over here. What's the assumption? Father doesn't know. Papa is making a mistake. And I have to correct the mistake. And he therefore takes his father's hand and he wants to move it. So Yaakov tells him, no, yadati b'ni yadati. I know. But you should know, okay, the younger one is going to be greater than the other one. When I see this, I see these two in one parsha. It couldn't be, but it wasn't going to be, but wouldn't it have made quite a difference if Yosef would have been able to have some kind of information earlier in life so that this cloud over the relationship between himself and his father, a whole lifetime he thinks, hey, Tata didn't deal with my mother the way he should have. The point that I want to make is that one of the most serious faults that creates most of the difficulty in the relationship between men and fellow men is jumping to conclusions. We make assumptions, and the assumptions may not be true. Most often, they are not. And we act on the basis of assumptions. We act on the basis of probability. Now the truth is that we can't live life with absolute certainty. Everybody is taking certain risks in life. Right? You have money in shkalim and you don't know Does one know what will happen tomorrow with the shekel? We learn to live either with the... I don't even think it's with probability or possibility. I think we just live a risky life, that's all. That's all fine when we're taking risks. But when we're talking about the relationship between men and fellow men, there it becomes very, very dangerous. All too often we assume that somebody said or did something and the intent was clearly, couldn't have been any other intent but to hurt me. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. He did it to hurt me. He doesn't care about me. He has absolutely no respect for me. This is a shana rachata. I'm not going to stand for it. I'm not going to talk to him ever again. I'm not going to say hello to him. We make all sorts of assumptions. This is constantly happening in the relationship between men and fellow. If you really want to know the truth, the whole parsh, the whole story of Yosef and his brothers from the very beginning until the very end, at the end of Parshat Vayechi, people who are making assumptions that are all wrong. Vayigash Elav Yehuda, beginning of Parshat Vayigash. Yehuda prepares himself for the great confrontation with this anti-Semit Tzofnas Paneach. I'm not going to let him lay a hand on a Jewish child. That's all. Fight, fight, fight for Binyamin. Never again. We let it happen once. We left Shimon over here. Never again. I wouldn't be a bit surprised that amongst the brothers they must have been talking what they said about this fellow Tzofnas Paneach. This is the salt of the earth kind of antisemite. There aren't even any Jews in Mitzrayim and he's already an antisemite. I mean, can you imagine? And here he comes over, Yehuda comes over ready to do battle with him. I'm not going to permit this death. Yosef sends everybody out and he says, Ani Yosef. Ani Yosef. Do you know what happens in that one single instant of time? Oh God, Yosef! It most probably they forgot all of the terrible things that they had been saying about him. If they would have read all the editorials that they wrote about Tzofnas Paneach after he reveals himself as Yosef, would have seen the Narishkeit lived with terribly mistaken assumptions all along. Yehuda makes mistakes. Yosef makes mistakes. Yaakov made one but is not going to repeat it. It goes all the way till the end of Sefer Bereshit. After the Levaya of Yaakov, when the brothers come to Yosef, they send a message to Yosef. Your father commanded before he died that you should be good to us and forgive us. Because they're assuming that this is all that Yosef is waiting for, the moment at which father is going to die and then it's going to be all over, he will take revenge. Everybody made assumptions and everybody was so dead wrong in all of their assumptions. And the assumptions are what guided and fueled all of the difficulties within the family during the entire period. Everything on the basis of that. Abisol Salanta said that in our private lives we are always making judgments. We are like judges. Have a domdman, as kol ha'adam lekaf schut, judge somebody lekaf schut. It means that we are like dayanim, like judges. What does the Rambam say is the halacha by a dayan? A dayan dare not paskin on the basis of possibility or probability. You can't make assumptions. The tragedies that can come as the result of making assumptions are so enormous. And the tragedies are not only for the other person, they're tragedies for the one who's suffering it. Yosef suffered, I'm sure he suffered a whole lifetime thinking that his father had not treated his mother properly. And then one single instant, one moment, Al pi hadibur, I did it because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. Let's go to the, I have a second part to this year. Let's see. I don't know how we're going to do it, but we'll try and do it. We'll try and do it. Or at least we'll begin it now, and we can always pick it up. The thread can be picked up someplace else in Torah.
Ephraim and Menashe. Ephraim and Menashe.
Here is one of the assumptions that Joseph makes. His father doesn't know. The Netziv, one of the great Pechushim on Chumash, from Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who was the Hashiva of the Volozhiner Yeshiva during the course of the last century until it was closed by the Russian authorities at the end of the 19th century. There are no Russians anymore, no authorities anymore, Zagunish. But then the Tsar closed the Volozhiner Yeshiva. The Netziv Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, the Hamikdavah. It's really a thread that takes us through all of Chumash, and it goes even into Tanakh. This whole relationship between Menashe and Ephraim. And I'm going to say it briefly now because I have one other thing to say after that. Let's see how far we go. He asks one question, and everything is based really on this one question. Menashe is standing by Yaakov's right hand side. Ephraim is by his left hand. Alright? What does Yaakov do? He now moves his hand so that his right is on the head of Ephraim, his left is on the head of Menashe. The Netziv asks a simple question. Why didn't Yaakov simply say to the two boys, why don't you just do me a favor, Ephraim, could you just move over here for a moment? Menashe, right over there, the other side, okay? Why didn't he simply ask them to move over? Was he sparing anybody anything? He isn't sparing anybody, because in a minute he's going to have to say, I'm sorry, what can I do? Ephraim is going to be greater than Menashe. Ephraim is going to be great. So why doesn't he ask them to move over? As one goes through Sefer Bamidbar, you'll find the following. The Jewish people are counted, a census is taken in Parshat Bamidbar at the beginning. Another census is taken in Parshat Pinchas at the end. In Parshat Bamidbar, in addition to the census, there is also the establishment of the Degolim. The 12 tribes are divided into four camps. Each camp has its own flag, has the head of the camp, and two tribes that are encamped together with the head of the camp. The Degolim are Degel Machaneh Yehuda, Degel Machaneh Reuven, Degel Machaneh Ephraim, and Degel Machaneh Dan. One goes through the parsha there, trust me. It says in three cases, it says the following. Degel Machaneh Yehuda, the flag of the camp of Yehuda. V'hachonim Alav, and those that were encamped with him. Two tribes. Degel Machaneh Reuven, v'hachonim Alav, and those who were encamped with him. Degel Machaneh Dan, v'hachonim Alav, and those who were encamped with him. One place the Torah does not follow this sentence structure, and that is Degel Machaneh Ephraim, the flag of the camp of Ephraim, and then the Torah says V'olav Matem Menashe. Olav seems to leave the impression that Menashe is over Ephraim. Furthermore, in the parsha of the second census, in Parsha Pinchas, there Menashe is listed before Ephraim. In Parshat Shlach, which is in the middle, and they list the Meraglim, Lemate Ephraim for the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea ben Nun, Lemate Yosef, Lemate Menashe, Gadi ben Susi. The tribe of Yosef, the tribe of Menashe, Gadi ben Susi. Why is Menashe more Yosef than Ephraim is? So the Netziv develops the following idea, all based on one thought. The thought is the following. Ephraim had greatness and Menashe had greatness. The greatness of Ephraim was in mind, intellect, Torah. Who was the favorite son of Ephraim? Yehoshua. Yehoshua really had all of the qualities, but the single most unique quality about Yehoshua was Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai Umisorol Yehoshua. All of Torah is entrusted to Yehoshua, and Yehoshua is the one who transmits Torah to all generations. Yehoshua is the great Torah leader of Klal Yisrael. Who is the leader or the great favorite son of Menashe? A fellow by the name of Gidon. Gidon was one of the shefts. Gidon was not necessarily an intellect. He was not known for his Torah greatness, but he did have a power of leadership. What was the power of leadership? An angel appears to him and says, listen, Klai, God has seen that Klai is all suffering. You're going to go save them. So he gets angry and he says, where is this God who's supposed to have taken us out of Egypt? Where is this God who's supposed to have done all of these great things? He says very, very sharp things to our Kodesh Baruch. And at that moment it says, God himself appears to Gidon and he says, Lech b'koch ha-chazeh, go with this great strength of yours, and you're going to save Klein. So what's the great strength? Shelomadeto sanegoria al-bonai, that you came to the defense of my children. Even though it was an attack on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but that's what the Rebbeinu Shem wants. He doesn't want anybody who's going to justify him. What he wants is somebody who's going to speak up on behalf of his children. He doesn't want anybody to go find all the Avedas of Klal Yisrael. Find Avedas by the Rebbeinu Shem, but don't find Avedas by Klal Yisrael. Lech b'koch ha-chazeh, go with this great strength of his. Gidon is the great leader. The great leader. Not the great scholar. Says the Netziv. I mean, it sounds as though he was even thinking, it would seem to us that he was thinking in English. He says, as far as standing with 2 feet on solid ground, there Menashe stands on the right, and Ephraim is to the left. In terms of leadership, b'halichot olam, in things that take place in this world, Menashe stands on the right-hand side, because he has that quality. In terms of head, mind, intellect, Torah, the right hand goes onto the head of Ephraim. And with this he explains everything throughout all of Torah. The story of Sefer Bamidbar is a great plan that was set in motion and then aborted. Tragedy strikes. At the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, Klal Yisrael is planning to move into Eretz Yisrael, to invade Eretz Yisrael. They're going straight in. At the end of Parshat Balotcha, Shlach, tragedy strikes, the people complain, they murmur, they're frightened, they're upset, they send Meraglim, Tisha B'Av, bad report, and everything changes. What changes, says the Netziv? The original intention was that they should enter Eretz Yisrael miraculously, everything with miracles, the divine presence clear all the time. Under those circumstances, do you know who the leader is? You know who you need? You need the Ephraims, not the Menashe. Ephraim is the one who in miraculous fashion, leads Klal Yisrael with the strength of Torah. But with the chet of the Meraglim, tragedy strikes. You know what? They are now going to enter Eretz Yisrael, not in derech nisit, in a miraculous fashion. They are going to enter Eretz Yisrael now, b'derech hateva. B'derech hateva, in the natural course of events. Who there rises to greatness? Then it is Menashe. Menashe is the one who takes over. Therefore, in Parshat Bamidbar, when they're listing Degel Machne Ephraim, the Torah is careful and he says, v'olav mate Menashe. The relationship between Ephraim and Menashe is not that Menashe is always secondary to Ephraim. There are areas in which Menashe rises over Ephraim. When it comes to sending the Meraglim, this is already part of the plan to enter Eretz Yisrael in Bederech Ateva, so who there is the real power of between the two, then it's Menashe. Yosef was Yosef HaTzadik, who had both qualities. He was Yosef HaTzadik, and he was the great leader who took a major world empire, and he made sure that there were loaves of bread in all of the supermarkets. You know what the man did? He made sure that there was bread for the whole world. He was not part of an empire that crumbled and what the Shikent Ashtikel break gefinnen. We're talking about Yosef is both tzaddik and administrator and leader, Moshe b'chol Eretz Mitzrayim. Those two qualities of his, you know, the kids are never like the precisely like the father. Each one gets part of Yosef. Ephraim is the tzaddik, God of the Torah. Menashe is the great leader. As far as entering Eretz Yisrael, b'derech hateva, then it is Menashe who has the strength, the power, and the personality of Yosef. When they are counted again at the end of Parasha, Sefer Bamidbar and Parasha Pinchas, then, you know what's happened at the end of Bamidbar? It's 38 years later. They are already encamped on the plains of Moab, ready for the thrust into Eretz Yisrael. There, who is counted first? Menashe, because Menashe has the greatness of leadership that's going to be necessary to conquer Eretz Yisrael. I want to close, take a few minutes, but it's so beautiful. From Rav Yankiv Kamenetsky, Zechut Tzadik Levracha, the great Rashiv of Torah Das, I have to read and quote a few things that he says. And he deals with a question that we didn't deal with yet, but we should deal with it. We started at the beginning of the parasha. We started reading Perek Mem Ched. So what happens? What's the first thing that Yaakov says to Yosef? He says to him, Ephraim uMenashe kiRuvain v'Shimon yehiyuli pasuk hey va'ato now shnei barnecha hanoladim lecha, your two sons were born to you be'eretz Mitzrayim, and before I came to Egypt, they're mine. Ephraim and Menashe, Ruvain and Shimon, Ephraim and Menashe will be like Ruvain and Shimon. So he asks, why didn't Yosef correct him immediately? Why didn't Yosef say, you don't mean Ephraim and Menashe will be like Ruvain and Shimon? Ephraim is the younger one. What you should have said is Menashe and Ephraim will be like Reuben and Shimon. He doesn't correct him. When does Yosef correct Yaakov? Only at the end, when he moves his hands. And take a look. How posik aleph in Perek Mem Ched. Vayihi achrei hadvarim haele vayom le Yosef hinei avicha chole vayikach et shnei bonav imo et Menashe ve'et Ephraim. The passage begins by telling us that he took his two sons with him, and they have to tell us who they are. Et Menashe ve'et Ephraim. In the proper chronological order. Pasuk Hey, he stands before Yaakov, and Yaakov says, Ephraim and Menashe, Keruvain v'Shimon yehiyu li. So first of all, why didn't he tell him, it should be the other way around? That's number one. The second thing is, why wasn't Yaakov afraid to do now something that had caused so much agony and anguish in his family? He is now taking a second son, and he is giving him the place of the first. It's being done. This is a double whammy. He is taking Yosef and making Yosef, giving Yosef that which should have gone to Reuben. And he is taking Ephraim and putting him before Menashe. All of the tzaddis started because he had shown favoritism to Yosef. How does he do it? How does he do it? So Rav Yankov says, first of all, Yosef could have thought in terms of why he mentions Ephraim before Menashe. It could have been Ephraim was his student. Ephraim learned every day with Zayda Yaakov. So, you know, like Ephraim was the, you know, Menashe had already gone out, he was out in the world doing his thing, but Ephraim was the Talmud. But more than that, he says, I'm going to read his words because you might not believe me that he says it. He says the sons, the Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, they were not upset about the fact that Ephraim and Menashe are getting a special bracha. No, not at all. The kulam hevinu, all of them understood, shebnei Yosef hutzrichu lebracha meyochedet, all of the sons knew, all the brothers knew that the sons of Yosef need a special bracha, yoter mishar habanim, more than the other sons. Mipnei shenoldu be'eretz Mitzrayim, because they were born in Eretz Mitzrayim, be'eretz temeya, in a land that is impure and unclean. V'lo ro beito shel Yaakov, they never saw the house of Yaakov. They didn't have memories of the hills of Hebron, of the sands of Beersheba. This was not part of their consciousness. They need a special bracha for Hoyoyare. He was afraid and the whole family was afraid. Shemo yitomu ben hagoyim bizman galutam. They're going to be prime candidates to assimilate in the time of Golas. Because what memories do they have? What do they have to recall? The other brothers have so much to recall. They knew it all. You understand that Ephraim and Menashe never davened at the Maral Samachpela. Never went to Kevin Rachel. What are you talking about? What experiences did they have in their neshama? And where were they born? They were born in Eretz Mitzrayim. So the brothers understood that they need a special bracha from Yaakov, because the probability that they would be the first to assimilate was very high. Goes on, and then Rabbi Yaakov takes another step further. He says, therefore, Ephraim may have needed more bracha than Menashe. Why was Menashe called Menashe? Menashe was called Menashe because he said, Kinashani Elokim, God made me forget all of the toil and the trouble. When Ephraim was born, he said, he called him Ephraim, Ki Hifrani, I have now multiplied Be'eretz on ye in the land of my affliction. Aha! Ephraim represents the idea in Yosef's mind, it's not bad over here in Mitzrayim. We're succeeding! Hifrani! Elokim be'eretz anyi. God has made me fruitful. I'm growing be'eretz anyi. Therefore, Ephraim needed a bracha. And Rabbi Yankin says more than that. He says, if you study, and I remember watching for years, the times that, you know, in camp and in yeshiva, Rabbi Yankin always used to learn Tanakh after davening. I think, listen, he lived till about 93, 94 to have learned, I think he was a constant saver of 2 prakim a day of Tanakh. I mean, it's awesome. That means he went over all of Tanakh at least 70, 80, 90 times. So he says, he makes another interesting comment. He says, if you will notice, take a look at all of the Egyptian names. What Egyptian names do we know? Potiphar, Sofnas, Paneach, Shifra, Pua. He says, Egyptian names usually were a takeoff of the name Taro. They'd have a Pei, they'd have a Reish. Huh? Pei, a Reish, an Ayin. Of all of the children, the only one who had an Egyptian name was Ephraim. Not only did his name represent the fact that Yosef feels comfortable now in Eretz Mitzrayim, he has a Goyish name. And I'm afraid to say, you know, the kind of names that we had in America, any name that I'm going to mention, somebody here most probably had it, and I'll be in trouble. I don't know why the only Goyish name I can think of is Max. I don't know if Max is a Jewish name. Huh? I don't know, you know, people, Aloysius, face what Jewish children were called in... We all know what it says on our passport that nobody sees. I had mine changed at the Mishad HaPnim. They called me for 30 years in Chutz Lars, my bank manager and my insurance agent called me Shalom. I'm not going to tell you what they called me here because of what it said in my past. But we changed it. It's all right. I'm legally, officially Shalom. Okay. Ephraim, Reb Yankov says Ephraim had an Egyptian name. He needed a bracha, you know. You can take Jews out of the Golas, but it's difficult to take Golas out of the Jews. And then he goes further and he says, two more things he explains. He explains the whole conversation. The whole conversation between Yaakov and his son Yosef. What we forget is, do you know who's standing there? Menashe and Ephraim are listening into the conversation. Read the whole parasha again. And you know what you'll see? He keeps talking about Eretz Canaan, and again, Eretz Canaan. I buried her in Eretz Canaan. I took her to Eretz Canaan. Take me to Eretz Canaan. And he's talking about where his mother is buried. What is all of this for? Reb Yankov says, you know what it's for? He wants those two children to hear. The place where the Buddha is buried, the Safta is buried in Eretz Canaan. That's where we're from. That's our land. You can be called Ephraim, whatever you are. You should know that you are not an Egyptian. All of this is the Zayder wants to be careful that he makes sure that he a lasting impression he should leave on these Einiglach. And one final thing, Reb Yankov says. Tell me, if I would not have quoted Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, would anybody have believed that he said this? This sounds like the kind of stuff I would say. Beautiful. But I remember, listen, before I came on Aliyah, I spoke to Reb Yankov and I asked him what I should do, and he told me, quote, Ichalt, as a mitzvah heinfies is almo given, vorn in weinen in Eretz Yisrael, und wollte ich gekennt, wollte ich gleich jetzt gegangen zum Airport, a reuf auf a Flugzeug, und gefahren in Eretz Yisrael. Unquote. That was a nearly perfect quotation. I believe that there is a mitzvah today to live in Eretz Yisrael like there always was, and if I could, I would go directly to the airport now, get onto a plane and fly to Eretz Yisrael. But I can't. Maybe at some other time I will discuss the end of that conversation, why he couldn't. We'll save that for another time. He makes one final comment and with that we'll close. 30 years before Yetzias Mitzrayim, the story is told in Sefer Divrei Hayamim. Bnei Ephraim made an abortive attempt at breaking out of Mitzrayim, and it says they broke out and they were pursued by the Egyptians. There was a terrible slaughter. Ephraim was nearly decimated completely. According to one opinion in the Gemara, the dead that Yecheskel brought back to life were the Bnei Ephraim who tried to break out to freedom 30 years earlier. And it was not simply that they had calculated or they had miscalculated when the time of Gula is supposed to come. Why Ephraim more than anybody else? Sir Reb Yankov says because Ephraim was more profoundly hurt by the shibud of Mitzrayim than all of the others. Because you know what Ephraim felt? I'm one of you! I was born here! I contributed to this society! My name is an Egyptian name! Why do you do this to me? When I saw this, you know what it reminded me of? 30 years ago, there was a study made in Brooklyn College. Germany is also correct, but I thought a study was made in Brooklyn College. I'm afraid to say it was more than 30 years ago. How do students feel about anti-Semitism? The findings were fascinating. The Yeshiva Bachem in Brooklyn College didn't seem to feel any terrible anti-Semitism. No, here and there were remarks. The more non-religious, non-observant, the further one was from Yiddishkeit, the higher was the intensity of their sensitivity to anti-Semitism on campus. And the explanation was quite clear. I'm one of you. I act like you, I walk like you, I talk like you. I'm part of mainstream America. Any hint of anti-Semitism is something that's going to hurt him worse than anybody else. I was in Yeshiva Bachur in Williamsburg, so I knew in order to get from where I lived on Lee Avenue to South 3rd Street, where the Yeshiva was, there were streets that you walked on and there were streets that you didn't walk on. And we knew there were streets where there were schutzim waiting for a Yeshiva Bachur, and that's all you needed. That's all you needed. But it didn't shake us to the very core. Okay, no. That's what Rav Yankiv is saying over here. Ephraim, born in Mitzrayim, an Egyptian name, he's part of this society just like anybody else. He could not tolerate the sheephood. And therefore, he made his own calculations when he thinks the Golos is supposed to be over, and he breaks out. He has to get out. The others were able to take it. The others always felt in some way, we're strangers. We're emigres. We came here from Eretz Canaan. This is not really our land. On some level, they did not expect that they were going to get great treatment in Eretz Mitzrayim. Very beautiful. There's a great deal more to be said about Menashe and Ephraim. We'll have more opportunities to learn.